So kia ora, this is Lorna Johnson and you're listening to Making Palmy Home. And my guest today is Devon Rye. So hi Devon, how are you doing?
Good, thank you, Lorna. Thanks for having me.
That's great. I'm really pleased to have you. So some of you may well know Devon because he's done quite a lot in the city. He's been here quite some time already. But Devon, tell us a little bit about what you're doing at the moment in Palmerston North.
Thank you for having me again. My name is Devon, as Lorna just mentioned about me. Well, I work for Freiburg High School, and also I've got another workplace, which is Red Cross. So both jobs have similar character. So especially working for young people and helping them to resettle here in Palmerston North. So it's basically helping the refugee young people. That's my job. That's what I've been doing now.
So you've got two places of work, really? So you're at Freiburg in the mornings, is it? Helping secondary school children?
Yes, Freiburg in the morning, and afternoon I come here and do that, a similar kind of job. It's just the place is different, as I mentioned.
Right,
so I just help them when the first initial, during the initial settlement phase.
Right.
So I'll help them, especially for the enrollment and for the any different enrollment, like GP, school enrollment. And
so some of it's the practical, the practicalities of settling?
Yes, practicality, yeah. And also more kind of a depth support. Like, for example, if some young people having some issues with the family, mm-hmm. domestic violence, so I'll be helping them to get along with that.
Okay, so kind of like a social work role, really?
Well, I think it's a superficial kind of social work role, yeah. But I guess it's more around building, yeah. Similar kind of social work role. Okay. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
And how long have you been at Freiburg? A little while now, I think, isn't it?
Well, I started in 2015.
Yeah.
So this is my 8th year I've been working there. I started as a teacher aid there in the initial phase for an half. Now I'm a bilingual tutor.
Right.
And also a community liaison. So I also run a program called Computer in Homes, which is, again, basically for the refugee families. When they first arrive in the country, Palmerston North, mm-hmm. they will be enrolled for the computer training, basically, just to help their kids in at home to do their homework and online stuff.
Yeah.
So I help them to provide Ministry of Education, mm-hmm. and also 2020 Trust, who provide them with a laptop. And yes, that's how I've been doing.
That's great.
That's another role.
And so you've got particularly a good reason to be doing this, haven't you? Tell us about how you came to Palmerston North yourself, and that's quite some time ago now. So
yes.
Tell us how you got here and what you think you bring to your role currently as a result of your experience of coming to Palmerston North.
Well, if I look back in 13 years time, I was in refugee camp in Nepal, so I'm languishing in a camp for 17 plus years.
Hang on a minute. How many years?
17
plus years in a refugee camp in Nepal.
Nepal, yes.
How old were you when you first went there?
When I left Bhutan?
Yes.
I came originally. I was from Bhutan.
Yeah.
I came to. I stayed in Nepal. I came when I left. I was 8 years old.
So you were eight when you left your home country,
yeah,
Bhutan.
Yeah, home country Bhutan, and stayed in the camp.
So you grew up basically in the camp.
Most of my life, most of my teenage was spent up staying in the refugee camp.
So tell us what that was like, because you know most people in Palmerston North won't have any concept of what that would have been like. I mean, tell us a bit about what it was like. What are your, have you got some good memories? And I guess there were some hard times too.
Yes. I don't have fresh memory, but I still got a brief, it's a long story, but to shorten it, I still remember we as a family, I have five siblings and my mom and dad, we left Bhutan in 1990. Mm-hmm. During that time, it was a high peak of political disturbances was going on there, and we left Bhutan and lived in there was no camp set up during that time, 1990. So we in the eastern part of Nepal, we lived in a river bank for.
You lived on the river bank.
River bank. It's just a transitional period. Yeah. For 6 or 5 months or so. Oh.
5 months on a riverbank.
Yeah, just a transitional period. So we are very much thankful to the neighboring villages who's helped tirelessly to support those people who were displaced from Bhutan.
So when you first arrived, there's no infrastructure, there's nothing set up at all in terms of a camp.
Totally.
And then how did it develop over time?
So what happened was, now this is the point that I believe ourselves to be more resilient and also believe on our strength.
Absolutely,
so a strength-based approach. That is how we have been coming up this up to this level. So, what happened was there was in that particular community we had trained teachers.
Yes.
And trained doctors and all professionals who were still they were already there. So what they did was they step up and started a basic school under the tree, an open land.
Right.
So during that time, the NGOs and INGOs, they saw the need of education and they came up and they stepped up.
Especially and I guess UNHCR. Numbers were increasing as well. How many people were there at that stage? Was it into the thousands by then?
Around 1500 or 2000, numbers were around that time. So because of the growing number of people fleeing the country, INGOs saw the need of help and support, and particularly in the field of education. So they stepped up, especially Caritas Nepal and UNHCR and Oxfam. These organizations started to intervene, and that's how.
So that's as an 8 year old. That's how you got your lessons, was it, under the tree?
Yes, that's
with the, with the teachers from your home country who had also been displaced, setting up the school there.
Yes, yes. Because in my family also there were three teachers actually. My mum was a trained teacher from Bhutan, and my dad and my even granddad was a teacher. So unfortunately, my granddad couldn't get involved in teaching due to his age barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how the school started in the beginning phase.
So explains a little bit about why you're so involved with young people and their education in New Zealand now, because you can feel some empathy for people in a difficult situation trying to learn.
Exactly. It's not only for the refugee background young people I'm much more interested, but also any background. There's no any cultural background and also cultural barriers in the support that I provide. So I could see that young people, there are lots of things still to be done when it comes to the youth development.
Yes, there's lots of challenges for youth who are born and brought up in New Zealand, let alone people who have migrated here, perhaps don't have English as a first language and so on.
Exactly.
So let's skip forward then, 17 years in the refugee camp, and by then I gather it was a much more organized camp, so different sections and different accommodations and stuff like that were already fairly well organized by that time.
So as far as my knowledge, and also to the reference that I'm, and also the resources that I've gone through, the Bhutanese refugee camp was the world settled camp in the world. I've heard that
as well, actually. And I should say to listeners that this is not surprising if you know the Bhutanese society here in Palmerston North. It's one of the most organized societies I've ever come across.
Thank you so
much. The structure and the organization is fantastic. And I think, I guess it comes from having to set up your own organizations and run them on your own for so long.
That's right. Yes. Thanks so much. So I did started. I would like to mention one of the tireless volunteer who's Dr. Bampa Rai, who was a senior surgeon in Bhutan, and he and his team initiated the concept of you know, the structuring the camp.
Right.
Structuring in a sense that, you know, so that we can identify who is living in which part of the camp. So yep. They divided the camp into different sectors, yep. and even sub-sectors, and also they identified who would be the right person to look after the particular section of the camp. So that way the concept developed,
yeah.
and it went well.
And I think that being able to organise yourselves and being able to set up your own schools and so on, I mean, that's a very empowering thing, isn't it?
Yes.
Instead of other people coming in from the outside, right. telling you what, you're the ones organising your own community,
right.
albeit in a displaced environment.
That's
so.
Right, yeah.
So how did you come to New Zealand? Now, I should say, I do know a little bit about how Devon came to New Zealand. But yeah. anyway, for the benefit of listeners, tell us how you came to New Zealand.
Well, actually, staying in Seoul for a long period of time, there was no any sign of repatriation,
yeah.
and also there was no any sign of local assimilation. So only the choice was to resettle in the third country. Resettlement
yeah.
process was the only the option.
Yeah, it's the only option left.
There was
yeah.
the only option left. So in the early 2007, I guess U.S. Was the first country to started taking the refugees from Nepal, that's Bhutanese refugees from Nepal.
Yeah.
So in early 2008, we were interviewed by the team of New Zealand Immigration, and also we were not aware that which country we would be heading to.
Right.
So we were aware that we are going for resettlement,
yeah.
but we were not aware about which country we're.
No, and I think that's something that many people don't realize, that there's
yeah.
no choice
exactly.
about where you're mm-hmm. going to go.
Yeah.
It's much more a situation
yeah.
of if you get an offer of mm-hmm. a place somewhere.
That's right. Yeah.
yeah.
So there was the story how we started our
right.
journey towards New Zealand.
So New Zealand offered you and the family a place.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I would say yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And after that, what happened was, we got interviewed several times and did some medical,
mm-hmm.
Medical tests and everything.
Right.
And
so lots of checks and lots of hurdles to jump over, I suppose.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. As we can see, I don't know about other countries like Americans and America and Canada, but New Zealand, there was much more, I think, the hurdles and, as you say, that much more immigration checks out and checks in.
Yeah.
yeah.
But eventually it all worked out and you came here in 2008, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
We arrived in 2008. We were the second family, I guess, second group.
Mm-hmm.
The first one was in March, I guess.
March, that's right.
Yeah. March, and we arrived in July.
Yeah.
So I remember Lorna was.
I was at that stage working
services.
For refugee services. I remember
yeah.
Devon and
yeah,
his family
yeah.
well.
Yes. Yeah.
Mostly I remember because you had very good English.
Thank you.
Lorna. You know, that was very impressive. The English was, superb. And we thought at the time that would be a help in resettling.
Yes.
And did you find that being able to be very fluent in English from the start was helpful? Did that help your settlement, do you think? Or?
Well, I guess I think the language, in my opinion, language is not only the top list that would help you to resettle.
Yeah.
The most important thing is the culture, and
right.
also you drive yourself.
Yeah, your
motivate,
personal qualities.
Motivate, personal
yeah.
qualities,
yeah.
motivation.
Yeah.
All this perseverance, all these kinds of things is also the most important thing.
That's interesting because that's
aspect.
Certainly a theme that's come through
yeah.
in a number of people I've spoken
yeah.
to, particularly people who've come like yourself, you know,
yes.
through a refugee experience, that the quality of perseverance is
yes.
really what's got
exactly.
them through as much
yes.
as anything.
Yeah.
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 And I must say, you know, to get through 17 years in a camp
yes.
and then to re-establish your life in a completely different
yeah.
country.
Yeah.
So what were some of the differences that struck you when you arrived in New Zealand? Maybe some of the things you were surprised about or things that were new to you that you hadn't come across before? Or was there anything in particular that you remember was a bit unusual? Or
to be honest, actually, I was speaking to last week. I was speaking to someone about a similar topic about how do you feel when you first arrived in New Zealand. So what I told him or her, well, I don't know, was it's the setup of the, you know, the country as such. What I mean is when you first get out of the train, got out of the plane.
Yeah.
Especially back in Asian countries, there's tall buildings. You know how the housing setup was there.
Yeah.
There's a crowd, lots of
quite high density of buildings. Yeah.
Buildings. So I was surprised to see that. Oh, this is of course in New Zealand, but not many tall buildings, and you know that housing setup is well organized and well set up. So I was surprised to see that. That's the first thing that struck to me.
Yeah, it was a bit different when you first arrived.
But not in a negative way.
It's just an observation, isn't it? I suppose. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Time's really going on. We'll better take a break now. One of the things that Devin does in his spare time is he's a very talented musician.
Oh.
And so he's chosen some music in which he's contributed the singing. Is that correct, Devin?
Do you want to tell us
about it?
We did this collaborative song, a global collaborative, I would say, because there was singers from America, Canada, even Darjeeling, India, Sikkim, Australia, Netherlands, all different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So this is awareness song, COVID-19 or awareness song.
Right.
So recorded in Darjeeling, India. So I was fortunate to be part of that team.
And did you do that from New Zealand?
Well, that was very challenging to send a record. What I did was I sent recorded on my mobile phone and sent that
and
clip to Darjeeling, and they did the recording and bits and everything there.
Wow.
So and finally it took around, I think, 2 months to do that all during the lockdown period.
Right. Well, we look forward to hearing it.
Oh, thanks so much.
That's awesome. Thank you.
नदेखिने जानलिने मानव शत्रु विरुद्ध भगाओ
Right, so we're back with Devin on Making Palmy Home, and Devin's been talking about his first days in New Zealand all those years ago. And Devin, we were just talking before the break, you know, about how it's important for your own personal qualities that help you with settling in a new country. But what did you find was helpful from people living here? How could they help you settle? And what tips would you give people who are new to Palmerston North, who, you know, might want to know how they can get settled in the community more quickly?
Well, I think to me, what I think is, I think everything is going well. I mean, you know, when it comes to supporting the migrants and refugees, but to some areas, like especially like language support, and also especially the transport support, I think that would be the main top priority for whoever comes to the country, newly arrived families. So I think that around that, but just around that. But
so do you mean in terms of transport support, that, you know, people often arrive, they maybe don't have a driver's license, they don't have a vehicle?
Because especially for the families, they don't have a driving license because they haven't driven of any vehicle back home.
Yeah.
So and also, they especially when with the ID you mean identity?
Yes.
Form of identity is only that paper form of ID. So, that would be the very challenging for them, and it would be much more helpful if the volunteers and also the someone who is helping them focus would be given to. Particularly to the transport and also
because it helps with independence, doesn't it? I mean, once you've got a driver's license and you can afford to get a car, you can easily travel for work, you can move your family around, you know, it makes life a whole lot easier.
Yes, taking them to the different service providers and all those kinds of things. Yeah.
So how did you learn to drive? Did you get some help from someone? Do you have to pay for lessons? Or?
Well, I think I can't remember exactly. It's 13 years now. I did a learner's in the Mangere Transit Camp. And when I came here, I think I did my restricted here.
Yeah.
So, someone helped me, but also more I did my, I mean, my I did mostly my own kind
of studied by yourself and that sort of thing. Time's running short, but I did want to talk to you about your role, which you had for a number of years as president of the Bhutanese Society. Tell us a bit about that, because as a young man, that was a very responsible position of leadership that you had for your whole community.
thanks for the question, actually. I could talk an hour for this
one. I'm sure.
Well, I mean, but in brief, in 2008, when we first arrived here, I started as a cultural coordinator, just helping especially the young people who would like to perform. And also up on this stage,
so the dancing, the singing, and sound systems,
all those kinds of things. I was helping them, and later on that I feel the need that I think some more needs to be done to bring them onto the upfront line. So not only the young people, but also the whole community. Mm-hmm. So what I did was I stood up for the general secretary. That's the secretary role, which I was elected, and I can in 2015. I started that until 2017. And after that, I feel more need. Okay, come on, I can do.
You pushed yourself forward.
Yourself forward because it's not only my my effort, but it was also my teamwork, effort, and also the community need, and also community voice that that was needed. So I thought, okay, I would whatever I knew and from my experiences, I would provoke myself towards the role. So. That's how I was elected as a president of Bhutanese Society in 2017, beginning of 2017. And during that time, I think our team did a very, very enormous job, enormous work, absolutely, around community development. Still my concern is, not concern, I would say my kind of voice is more kind of wider community engagement.
Yes.
We can do a lot in intra-community, but we have to be around inter-community. So that's my voice. So that's why I think you also know pretty clearly, Lorna, when we first, 17, we did at this square.
Yep.
So we did demonstration, peace demonstration to support the Gorkha women in back in India. So that way, it's not only about demonstration that is, but also to show that we are Bhutanese and resettled here in Pamir North, because a lot of communities, they don't know who the Bhutanese people are.
Yeah.
So it's just to showcase our identity. I won't say identity. Showcase our representation in the society. So we did that, and other than that, we have been achieving a lot, and still the teams are doing. Still, and after that, in 2019, we finished our team. Finished. Completed the tenure. So and after that, there's a set of new team who is doing an enormous job. Awesome job.
They are doing an awesome job. And I think you are a very organized community, sport, cultural,
that's right.
Social support. Yeah. It's just, it that's really right. is very impressive.
Yes.
Now, in amongst all of that, you've got a young family.
Yes.
And do you have time for any pastimes and hobbies?
During those time with my community work, mm-hmm. it was very difficult.
Yeah.
Even during weekends, I had meetings and seminars and workshops and trainings I had to attend.
Yeah.
Regardless that of I have a family, I can't avoid that. But now I've started to spare myself of my weekend time.
That's good. Yeah.
to public holidays, I try as much as possible to spend the time with my family, especially I've got 7-year-old son and my wife who is busy working and me too. So during that time, we try to manage to spend the time with my, and also I've got a puppy dog. Not puppy, actually. She's a dog now. It's a little dog. I'm still the adult now.
Oh, that's 11, cool.
11 months. So.
So that's nice. That's nice. Yeah. And the music, has that always been something that you've enjoyed doing, or is that
But music. I mean, I think it's not only to me. It's music is influential and also a part of their life to everyone, maybe partially or completely. But to me, it has. But it was completely the part of one of my hobbies in the back then. But now, because I can't do much commitment towards music now.
Yeah. So you don't have as much time for it as you used to.
Yes.
Well, I'm not surprised between your community work, mm-hmm. your two roles, supporting young people and your family, and not forgetting the dog.
No, that's great.
Mm. Look, Devin, time's up. I just can't believe we've got through quite a lot.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
And it's been really interesting talking to you. And I'm sure that people have learned quite a lot about some of the experiences that other people go through maybe before they come to Palmerston North. So thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Laura.
And listeners, you've been listening to Making Palmy Home. I'm Lorna Johnson. And you can always catch it on the podcast on npr.nz/show/Making Palmy Home. Thank you.